When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and has insisted we record this episode before Palace play Man United, so a certain someone can't get his own back. I'm Kevin Day, and a certain someone is, of course, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, still stuffed full of sea bream after his birthday on Sunday. Did you have a nice time, Kieran?
I had a very enjoyable evening. Thank you very much, Kevin. Yes, it was superbly cooked by the Baroness. And we've already had people on social media asking for the recipe, as well as we've now got people asking if we can send Marmite and cheese loaves to them.
Well, never mind that. I don't know if somebody sent you... I'm still trying to find out whether it's a hoax. Somebody sent me an advert for Marmite ice cream. Which, if somebody's photoshopped that to taunt me, I'm going to be furious. Because literally, for the first time in my life, you know how much I hate the summer. I can't stand it. But if there's Marmite ice cream at the end of the winter rainbow, I'll be perfectly happy. Kieran, later on, we'll be hearing from Ben Harrison, who's chairman of the Tranmere Rovers Trust. In another of those interviews that make you proud to be a football fan, it's a really good interview. And it raises some really interesting questions as well. And he works selling beer, so he's almost the perfect guest for me. But before that, we have some news. And this first story, Kieran, is a massive story from the Far East that may cause some nerves in the West Midlands.
Yes, this is in relation to Suning, which is a retail company in China. And it also owns a company called Jiangsu, who were the Chinese Super League champions last season. Terrific, good achievement, and so on. And then at the weekend, the owners said, "We're ceasing trading. We are stopping playing football. We don't want anything to do. The club's not going to play any more matches. We're getting rid of the women's team. If somebody wants to buy it, they can buy it for a dollar." Which, you know, instantly Steve Dale's ears pricked up. that's what happened, which is quite scary. And then you delve a little bit further into Suning, and they're also the company that had the Premier League TV rights.
Yeah.
When the broadcaster called PPTV, who Suning owned, they just walked away from the deal a few months ago, really leaving the Premier League in a bit of a mess, because it was a £500 million 3-year deal, or $500 million 3-year deal, which was pretty lucrative at those values, and they just stopped paying, which meant that the Premier League then had to try to hawk themselves around to get a replacement deal, which is worth only a fraction of what they were originally anticipating. So, you know, we all know that the Premier League clubs, they're not rolling in money, but as a result of the pandemic, like everybody else. But you know, this was a further damage to all those clubs that have lost out on match day income. And then you do a little bit more digging round, and Suning also own Internazionale in Italy. And they'd lost over €100 million in the last year. Now, if you're losing money and you've got an owner, you know, such as Mansour, Abramovich, and so on, at least they can dig the clubs out when they're losing money. But here, you start to get really twitchy. So it looks as if Inter are up for sale, with the likes of Goldman Sachs advising and potential private equity owners coming in. If a private equity owner comes in, if anybody thinks that you're going to be better off, you're in for a shock. You know, you cannot even order a set of paperclips without getting it authorized from these new owners. They've got no interest in football. It's all to do with the bottom line. We have spoken before about my fear for a bit of a a bit of a house of cards and domino effect in the transfer market. And when you take a look at Internazionale's creditors, they owe Manchester United over 50 million euro for the signing of Romelu Lukaku. Now, if they go the same way as Jiangsu, what happens to that 50 million euro? And then you've got all of the other clubs that are owed money on top of that. And you know, it's this sort of ring of roses that we've got in respect of football in terms of the money flowing around the transfer market. And there are some parallels with what we saw in 2007 in terms of the toxic debt that was being passed around at the time.
One of the things Ali always tells me off for is using the word literally, literally all the time. But this is literally like Liverpool, after winning the Premier League title, announcing that they were no longer taking part in any football activity and they'd ceased to exist. Is there any link at all to what we've spoken about previously, the Chinese government's increasing lack of enthusiasm for football? Are the two linked? Is there a government input into this, do you think, or is it a purely business decision?
I think it's a business decision. The core business of the parent company is retail. We all know that retail globally is struggling. And I think what they're trying to do is to protect the core business. And therefore, they see football as being a relative insignificance. The Chinese government is still very keen to develop football domestically because they are very keen to have the World Cup in 2030 or 2034, which sort of links us into what Boris Johnson has been saying in the last 48 hours or so. So I don't think there'll be any pressure domestically, but there is certainly indications from the Chinese government that they would rather that the wealthy owners and the wealthy organisations in the country focus on the domestic game rather than trying to make overseas purchases.
Yeah, for those of our listeners who may not be aware of the Boris Johnson reference, he indicating in the last day or so that the UK and Irish Republican government, Irish Republic government, I should say, before my cousin said it's not a Republican government, talking about a joint bid for the World Cup in 2030, which, if it's competing with China economically, may be a problem. So what you're saying about the Chinese government is, so this is not necessarily bad news for those Premier League clubs like Wolves and West Brom who have significant Chinese links?
I don't think so. I think this is a decision which has been made by one owner. I mean, my understanding is that West Brom are presently up for sale and there are people circulating the club with a view to coming up with a bid, but they can't agree on price. Fosun, who are Wolves owners, there's no indication that they've lost their affection for the Black Country and they want to carry on in terms of the present level of investment.
It's a fairly unprecedented decision, isn't it, Kieran? I mean, they haven't just said that we're winding down a football club, we want to buy it. That's it, just overnight, it's over. That I can't think of any similar situation. Can you?
Certainly not in the world of football. You know, normally you get some indication that this is going to happen. I mean, having worked in the world of insolvency, you know, I was quite used to things in other industries being closed down immediately. But football has a lot of leaks. You tend to be aware of where the issues are because either a director says something to a fan or a journalist and it gets out, but this has come out of nowhere.
Now, I was going to say our next story takes us to Spain, but having already upset some Irish Republicans, I might upset Spanish people if I say Spain, because it's not Spain, it's Barcelona. Catalan police have made four arrests over financial issues at Barcelona.
Yes, and this is a very weird one. And again, I think you have to dig deeper and deeper to find why on earth are the police becoming involved. Barcelona employed two social media advisor companies with typical names. One of them is called i3 Ventures and the other one is called NiceStream. You know, so the typical Ponzi language used. And they were paid to manage and monitor comments about Barcelona and the Barcelona president and the Barcelona players on behalf of the club, which it doesn't seem necessarily the best use of money. And it turns out that they were being paid around about 1 million euro a year, which, you know, I'm quite happy to do that. You know, if somebody wants me to check to see whether somebody's being called a slag on Facebook and pay me a fortune, I'm there. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, while we're talking about that, Kieran, who is the chap who manages your Twitter account? Because he has quite the potty mouth sometimes, isn't he?
Yes, indeed. Especially in relation to Lee Mason.
Let it go, Kieran.
You then look at what happens at Barcelona, and apparently any expenditure over 200,000 euro a year has to be authorised. It effectively has to go through a committee to be approved, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, in any business, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you spend above a certain level, you've got to get two people to sign off on it. Yeah, the usual type of controls that you'd expect in business. But this was a million euro a year, and the way it appears to have been done is slicing and dicing. So instead of paying them a million euro a year, they pay them 100,000 euros 10 times, and that goes beneath the radar. So loads of people were completely unaware. And it then turns out that the Barcelona president, Bartomeu, he fell out with Lionel Messi, and he got these social media companies then started trolling the likes of Messi, Guardiola, Xavi, and the other presidential candidates. Mm. So it was using effectively the club's money for the personal campaigns of the president, who has now resigned. You know, he's now completely out of the equation, and he is one of the people who have been arrested by the financial crimes police in Catalonia.
Right. It seems odd, doesn't it, with all the figures we've heard about Barcelona in recent years, that that sum of euros is the sum that's getting them arrested. There must be more to it than that, you'd imagine, wouldn't there?
I can't see anything. I mean, it seems a strange issue to get the police involved in the first place, but it has become very personal. And we've got the elections for the next Barcelona president taking place in the next week or so. So everybody's trying to position themselves either as people who are trying to be president and think that Bartomeu, you know, say, oh, he was a wrong one. You know, we never trusted him anyway. Yeah. Or to taint one of the other presidential candidates who might have been seen having a coffee with this bloke. You know how bitchy things are going to get. Mm. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. The sums involved seem relatively low, but I think it's the principle that things were taking place behind people's back, which has proven to be the tipping point.
And this notion of slicing and dicing, is that a legitimate business? I hesitate to say that phrase because it sounds more Uncle Terry than Barcelona. But is slicing and dicing, again, that slicing and dicing sounds a bit more Uncle Terry than Barcelona as well. But is that a legitimate business process?
No, not
it's
really.
It's
a means of trying to circumvent the existing controls within a business. So let's say that, you know, you're paying somebody £500 a week to clean your windows and at an office, and you've got to sign off on everything over £30. Well, you pay them 20 times at 25, and one of them says cleaning windows, and another one says doing the groceries, and another one says doing the vacuum. Yeah. You know, the usual shite. But there are ways around financial controls, and this is one particular method.
Yeah, we currently can't afford £500 a week for cleaning windows, but luckily it's pouring with rain, so nature's doing it for us. although we haven't got good, healthy, clean rain like you've got in Sussex. We've got South London rain, so the windows end up dirtier after it's rained than beforehand. Interesting story at Rochdale. A pair of New York-based investment managers have joined the board at Rochdale following the departure of the chairman a couple of weeks ago. And of course, I'm of that generation. You see the words New York and investment manager, and you think these people must have must have either a lot of money or some coats of a certain overcoat type nature. I don't know why I said that, but you know what I mean.
Well, these are fine, upstanding individuals. Dan Altman and Emre Marcelli. Last summer, they bought some shares in Rochdale. And Dan Altman is involved with an organization called Smarter Scout, i.e. it's a talent ID organization. So it's trying to find places. And the aim at the time, or their plans at the time, was effectively to use Rochdale as a vehicle to show just how good Smarter Scout is. You know, we can find these nuggets. We can therefore potentially bring them into Rochdale. They're intending to get a director of football so that they have some form of strategy involved. And then, of course, sell the players on at higher prices and everybody wins. Mm. So there have been a few changes in the boardroom. So both of these gentlemen were asked to become directors. And if you go to the club website, it says on the 24th of February, yes, we're delighted that that Dan and Emre are joining the board of directors. All was fine. And then Dan Altman posts on his LinkedIn account very, very recently, I've had second thoughts and I'm not going to do it. It's an inappropriate time to be joining the board of Rochdale, and we might get round to it at some point in the future. And this is where I feel slightly more uncomfortable, because surely there's never been a better time to get involved in a football club if you think you can help it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never been a worse time if you want to make money out of it. But if you genuinely want to help, then this would seem like a good time. So I always worry as well when statements are made via LinkedIn rather than club sources as well, is because it kind of, most football fans wouldn't necessarily be looking for statements on LinkedIn, would they?
No. I mean, it now has literally a couple of hours before we recorded this show, it's now come through onto the Rochdale website, but there's been a gap there of 2 or 3 days, and it was only because you know, we've got some friends on from Rochdale who've contacted us on social media, right, that we realised, yeah, that the decision had been reversed.
Mm. Rumours of a takeover at Ipswich, Kieran, although the man running the club currently says there is no offer on the table, or therefore rumour of a takeover.
Yes, someone's going to come out of this with egg on face. Ipswich are currently owned by a guy called Marcus Evans. He runs hospitality and events management. So clearly his main form of income, his main line of business, has been suffering terribly as a result of COVID. To give you an indication as to what it's like to run a club, and Ipswich, yeah, they fly with underneath the radar. They have lost £330,000 a week, every week, for the last decade. So think about that. You've got to write out a check for £1 million every 3 weeks to keep the club going.
Crikey.
Mm. Yeah, that is, it is just ludicrous. Now, okay, they've had some player sales as well to help with it. So a story appeared in The Athletic from our good friend Matt Slater, who, you know, is a guy that really researches, yep, his yep, stories in incredible depth. And I think we're trying to get him on the show to have a chat on about things in general soon. The story was, there's a guy called Brett Johnson who runs a private equity company, a sports investment company as well, and he was going to take over the club. He was going to buy it for less than 20 million quid. But more importantly than that, Marcus Evans was going to write off the close on 100 million that he's owed by the club. He's just going to walk away and say, well, I'm not going to get that money back, but more importantly, I'm not having to write out a cheque for £1 million every few weeks. Mm. So, you know, he said, you know, it was a bit like the bank of mum and dad when you lend your kids money to get their first mortgage or whatever it's going to be, or their first car. You know the money is lent, but you're never going to see it again. So that was the story in The Athletic. And then we go to the East Anglian Daily Times, mm, which is, of course, the local paper. And the general manager of Ipswich, when asked about this taker, goes, well, it's news to me. There's no offer on the table. I'm very certain that Marcus Evans isn't planning to sell the club. Otherwise, I would have been told. Mm. So that seemed very strange, and he's really pushed back on this rather than saying, you know, no comment, we're not in a position. And then when you start to look at some of the issues with Ipswich, it's a club that was in the playoffs. I think it was in something like 2016 to go up to the Premier League. You know, you and I are old enough to remember when Ipswich were doing absolutely superbly. They finished runners up in the top division.
Yeah,
they were super, the progress in Europe. Yeah, they were a cracking football team, and one of the first teams to sort of embrace the use of overseas players. But recently, if you look at some of the comments from former team managers, the likes of Roy Keane, Paul Lambert, Paul Hurst, and so on, they've said there's no communication at the club. You can't speak to the chief executive, you can't speak to the club owner. And these comments from Lee O'Neill appear to echo that. The Paul Lambert, who was the manager until last Friday, he ended up saying, "Oh, I'm going to get sacked this weekend," and then he got sacked that weekend. Yeah, and it just doesn't feel too good. So that's where we are at present, and hopefully the fog will lift in the next few days. I'm not giving too much away here. I was asked to do a little bit of an investigation, to do a bit of valuation work on the club, 6 or 9 months ago, and it wasn't for these people. I was certainly aware that there was interest in Ipswich, but in the world of football deals, you kiss a lot of frogs. I'm asked to sort of do numbers on quite a regular basis, and 99% of the time it will turn into nothing. So I knew if you have red, amber, green in terms of where you think clubs are for sale. I had Ipswich in my amber collection. Being colorblind, it doesn't really mean a lot to me, of course.
The grey one.
That's where we are.
Yeah. Speaking of lack of communication, the more astute amongst you may have noticed that when Kieran said we're trying to get Matt Slater on the show, I said, good. What I meant was, are we? I've literally told nothing. I'm a glorified reader out, is what I am. Basically, I get my instructions on a Monday and a Thursday, and it's you talk about those fans who are old enough to remember, Kieran, that Ipswich side with Murren and Tyson and the UEFA Cup winning team. It was a fun team, but also we're old enough to remember Ipswich were always associated with stability of ownership. They were owned by the same family for decades, and they were legendary for allowing a manager to get on with it, and they were always very reluctant to sack managers. So it's rather sad to see what I would consider an old school club suddenly behaving like the rest of the clubs, basically, and starting, the turnover of managers is starting to get much quicker. And as you say, this business about not communication it's a shame, because they're always a kind of benevolent, friendly club that everybody, apart from Norwich fans, were quite pleased to see do well.
It's difficult to hate Ipswich. I'm part of them, of course, if you're a Norwich fan who felt that Ipswich got an unprecedented amount of admiration from people who like the way that they played football, which is quite a reason to be sympathetic towards the club. But certainly under the Cobbold family, who used to own Ipswich, yes, they gave the manager plenty of time to bring in his own views and his own systems, and there was never an urgency to get up and to win the next match that we see elsewhere. Mm.
Also had the best away pub in the country, bar none, the Drum and Monkey, which was the best reason for playing Ipswich, and it's been knocked down and made into a car park now, which breaks my heart. He said, you simply wouldn't knock a cathedral down. Why you would knock the Drum and Monkey down? Just breaks. Anyway, Kieran, before we get into our brilliant interview with Ben from the Tranmere Trust, remember Guy very kindly put a story in about Roy Hodgson just days after Palace had beaten Brighton at your place to cheer me up even further and to rub it into you even further. I think he's put this story in as a little present for you. I can only assume Guy thought, what can I do to cheer Kieran up? It's been his birthday. So what he's done is put this story in, and basically it's a story that Premier League referees who make errors will receive lower end-of-season bonuses, which presumably means that Lee Mason owes you money.
Yeah, this is an intriguing story. First of all, it turns out that the a referee at Premier League level is on a basic salary of 110 to 120 grand a year,
which is good money.
Which is good money. It's a challenging job. I think it's fair money. You know, they shouldn't be doing it for peanuts. We've always said that they should be professional. So yeah, this is certainly a very handsome salary. And on top of that, there's what they refer to as a merit table, and at every match there is somebody with a clipboard who is going around and saying, well, they got that free kick right, they got that throw in wrong, and then they give them an overall mark, and that goes back to PGMOL, which is the company which represents referees, and then that is fed into a spreadsheet, and a bit like the football table, you know, where clubs in the Premier League are given £1.9 million per place on merit, it will churn out an end-of-season table, and the people at the top will be earning £50,000, and that drops as you go down each position in that table as well. Hmm. So, you know, you could be the likes of, like, so some of these referees, 160, 170 grand a year. And again, I don't begrudge them a penny, because it is a tough job.
I agree with you, Kieran, but to be perfectly honest, I didn't realise a referee's got a bonus. And I think everybody listening to this now will be going, you mean fill in name of referee here is getting extra money? For us, it's Craig Pawson. It used to be Mark Clattenburg. But what worries me slightly is that There's even around the Lee Mason issue, there's always been this slight criticism that referees are basically not refereeing the game itself. They're refereeing for the assessor, which is understandable. They're making decisions to make sure that their assessment is. If we now know that they're getting money for that, I'd rather they got a bigger basic salary, Kieran. I mean, you need to encourage referees into the game. And of course, the abuse for a ref isn't as much in the Premier League as it would be lower down or in Hackney Marshes by tradition. But I'd much rather they got a basic salary than extra money for getting decisions right. As also, I did a piece with a referee once for Match of the Day too, and he was very open and very honest. But at the end, he said, I'm going to have to leave you for 5 minutes while me and the assistant ref get our story straight. So there's an element of that that concerns me a little bit. But obviously, you being a big old capitalist, you're less worried.
I'm
sorry for calling you a big old captain. Yeah, that's cruel of me. Sorry.
I work in Liverpool. I'm a trade union member. And I'm just being called a capitalist.
Sorry, Kieran. I'm sorry. Well, it would make Guy laugh as well. I'm going to call Guy a benevolent socialist. He's a lovely chap.
I can see that in some ways it's a reward for getting decisions right on a regular basis. So, but it does seem strange, because you might have three or four matches where there's no controversy, and therefore you end up getting fantastic assessments. And you get another referee who gets two or three matches where there are some really tough decisions to make, because not every decision is a nailed-on penalty, or you can definitely say that's a free kick to one club or the other. Yeah. Sometimes it is, you know, 60-40 a lot of the times. So we've only got to go back to the decisions that were made at the weekend in terms of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer claiming that the Illuminati were out to get Manchester United in terms of not giving them penalties anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is a tough job. And there are easier matches than others.
Wouldn't it be great if Dan Brown's next novel was about Man United not getting penalties? They'll get loads of penalties tonight. Yeah, my one fear about this story is that the reason Guy's actually put it in is so he's going to suggest to us that perhaps there'll be some kind of performance-related bonus after the end of each pod, because I think there's no point lying that we do get a little bit of money now for the pod, a little bit of money, I have to stress. But the idea that he's going through it with a clipboard going, well, you stuttered a little bit, didn't you, when you introduced that to Kieran mentioned being colourblind again. You mentioned Palace again. Oh, I don't know what we're going to have to knock a fiver off. The regular listeners, Kieran, of which there are many, and we thank all of you, will know that Tranmere are a club that you think very highly of. And I don't think that will change when you hear this chat we've just had with Ben Harrison, who's chair of the Tranmere Rovers Trust, and also, I have to say, runs a rather funky beer company. Ben, thank you very much for joining us. Before I ask you some important questions about beer, tell us a little bit about the Trust and about how you got involved in the first place.
My involvement stretches back about 15 years. I think someone tried to buy Tranmere Rovers, who perhaps renames we keep house, but wanted to ground share with Chester.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, he ended up becoming the owner of Chester, and the Trust went from 10 members to 800 overnight. And then we got into a bit of a dialogue with our owner then, Peter Johnson, who took Tranmere to some great heights. We were in the playoffs for the Premier League, to get the Premier League 3 years on the run. Great times in the 90s. And developed a bit of a relationship with Peter, perhaps not the same as the owners we've got now, but the Trust started to become active. I think the Labour government at the time tried to encourage trusts to have a greater say in the running of football clubs. And we went for that, tried to support the club as much as possible. And then Peter Johnson lost his interest, went to Everton, came back to Tranmere, didn't really want to be there. And then we went on a little bit of this downward spiral, which resulted us going out of the Football League. So we've always had the best interests of the club at heart. And obviously now we've got new owners who are completely different, really, to the last owner.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Yeah, and how did you get involved yourself specifically?
I think just being a Tranmere fan since the age of seven, so for over 50 years, I've just been an avid fan. I've always couldn't quite understand why local people would always go over the water and watch Liverpool and Everton. Everyone knows that on Merseyside. In the 80s, you could go to Tranmere on a Friday, go to Anfield or Goodison for £1.50 on a Saturday. But I've always, you know, I'd write letters to the local paper and said, why are we only getting 1,500? Why don't people support the local football club? So I've always been quite idealistic about it. Remain that way now. And I think we've been given a great opportunity with where the club is now to really boost Tranmere up and push that on.
Yeah, growing up as a Palace fan, that was a question I always asked, why don't people support their local club? And there was a real spurious glamour about Tranmere as well when I was a kid, because the idea of playing football on a Friday night, I used to think was quite sexy for some bizarre reason. But obviously, Ben, we've been highlighting the amazing work that clubs and fans have been doing through the pandemic. But remind people of some of the good stuff that the Trust were doing before this terrible last year, because you've got quite an impressive CV of things that you've been up to, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, when Mark and Nicola came in, the fan base was quite low. They inherited a club that was, I hate to use this comparison, but going to Tranmere was like visiting someone in prison. the ground looked downtrodden. You'd do it out of duty. You'd kind of come away and think, I've done my duty for the week. It was never massively enjoyable, scrapping around. It was the social aspects. But
yeah, of course,
Mark and Nicola brought us in and said, right, you know, let's get cracking on season tickets. They allowed people to pay, not all in one go. Like a lot of clubs just go, give us your money. I can't pay the wages beyond the end of the season. They went interest-free for a year. And we got the season ticket sales up from about 50%, from 2,500 to 4,000. We've improved the ground. We've just said to Kieran before, we've put some interesting murals around the Wirral, Birkenhead. Using a very well-known award-winning artist, Paul Curtis. And one of their murals is interestingly got in the Guardian's top 10 of football murals in the world. And it's brought a bit of a spirit, a bit of colour to the area. And we've also, a couple of other initiatives, we've worked on something called, we call the SWA2, the Super White Army 2, where we fund 850 tickets per game for people who couldn't afford to go to the match, want to go with a family, want to go with the local youth centre charity. And at Tranby, you can go and watch live football. I think if you want to go to particularly Anfield, maybe not so much Goodison, you've got to book your tickets months in advance. It'll cost you £100. And I think, you know, getting people, it's a proper community club where, you know, you want people to feel part of it. And it's a good habit to get into.
Yeah, and you've got that fan park up and running as well, which looks really impressive.
Yeah, we have. And I presume you're going to come on to be it. We started that 4 or 5 years ago. We did it for our local derby game against Chester. And obviously, yeah, you two have kind of got the banter between Brighton and Palace. Mm. And we put a marquee up for the afternoon. We offered 100 Chester fans free food. Come and have a drink. Everyone said, there might be a riot. You know, we haven't played them for 10 years. And it was just fantastic. Everyone enjoyed each other's company. There was 8,000 people at the game. Nicola came to me afterwards and said, would you put one up permanently? 4 years on, it's a great beer tent, as it's called. It's called The Tent. You get 400 or 500 people in per game, away fans, home fans. And it's allowed, Mark and Nicholas allowed us to build some trust funds up, which hopefully can be converted into some equity in the club. Mm. And it makes the whole match experience completely different.
I'm always very jealous of a club with a statue, and you got one organised, didn't you, as well, of Johnny King.
Yeah.
Most non-Tranmere fans would assume you'd have a statue of Dixie Dean, who started there, but obviously Johnny King is somebody who means a lot to the club.
He does. And what we decided to do is to get the funds together, put it up while Johnny was alive, and he actually came and unveiled his own statue.
Oh, brilliant.
A lot of clubs tend to do these things after someone's passed away as a tribute. We used a guy called Tom Murphy, who's done the Dixie Dean, the Shankly statue. And ours was a bit unusual. I think the Shankly statue was paid for by Carlsberg. Everton's Dixie Dean paid for by the club. But we got 893 subscriptions of fans whose names are on the plinth, and they all contributed to it. So it's got real ownership by the fans of the club. And to do that for one guy just shows what high regard he was held by the fans of the club.
I'm quite jealous of your murals as well, because I saw the T-shirts on the Trust shop site, and they're brilliant murals, because we had one at Sellers Park. You couldn't tell the difference between Jeff Thomas and Ian Wright.
Yeah.
it was that bad. But there's one thing in particular that I noticed doing, and I do, despite what people think, I do some research for this, and it's something that I pointed out to Ali, my wife, and she thought was brilliant, because I think you're the first club in the country to provide free sanitary products for women at games as well, weren't you? Which I think is a brilliant initiative.
Yeah, it was the girls from who'd worked with Celtic, and I just picked up and I saw it, and then we were the first English Welsh club to do it. And once again, you saw me going around the ground at 2 hours before match day into every women's toilet, stocking them up, shouting, "Is there anyone in there?" But we did it in a subtle way, and obviously now the governments have stopped the tax on it, and it's now become, you know, rightly so, right across football. Just something else that's quite easy to do and should be done, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we've learned a little bit about what the Trust has done before the pandemic. Tell us a little bit more about your work during the pandemic.
Yeah, I think from last March onwards, I think we went straight into COVID. And then, you know, Birkenhead, I'm a born and bred Birkenhead lad, proud of the town, but a lot of people have got a bit of a downer on it. It's not awash with money. We used to have a great big shipyard. That's probably why we've got a good affinity with Sunderland, who were playing at Wembley the week after the next.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And we started with the club. We started delivering food parcels. And then within weeks, we were getting 250 requests off the local authority.
Wow.
Can you help? Obviously, for them, no finance was available. So we went out to the fan base, went out to the club sponsors, raised 50,000. We had a team of 20 people doing it week in, week out. I think we ended up delivering 4,000 parcels,
wow,
which would keep people going for a good 4 or 5 days. And then I think the club obviously worked on some mental health projects, some isolation. In a way, the country tried to come out of COVID, which didn't quite happen. You know, easing lockdown, and we've been back into doing exactly the same again in the last couple of months. And now more than ever, I mean, you get personal emails of people saying, particularly last month, I think 2 weeks ago, that I'm a working mum, my kids are at home, I'm schooling them, I've got no food left in the cupboard, it's -2 degrees, do I put the heater on? Is there any way you can help? And the other side as well is a lot of requests aren't coming off men, they're coming off Tranmere fans who know fellas are struggling but would never, ever ask for food handouts because it's the ultimate kind of, not low, but you don't want to admit that you're poor and you can't feed yourself. I think women, I hope it doesn't sound sexist, but they'll think of the kids and go, I'm not proud, my kids aren't going hungry. But a lot of, particularly young males, will struggle on. So we've been able to make a good difference there.
I mean, this is off-piste, basically, but I've done a lot of stuff with Comic Relief over the years, including visits to Kenya and some places of brutal poverty. And Comic Relief, and it's the women that will get us out of this, because it's like it's the women that roll their sleeves up and have the practical solutions. And when they do get the money and get the help, they put it to proper use. And I mean, it's 2021, Ben, and we're talking. It's shameful that we have to talk about this week after week on this pod. As we do it, were you coordinating that effort with other local clubs, as clubs have done in South London, sort of made it a joint effort?
A little bit. We were in touch with Liverpool and Everton, but I suppose the Mersey's quite a defined river. It's you know, a good mile or two long. So the Whittles are a strange community because it's got a lot of wealth on the west side, but also on the east side, on the banks of the River Mersey, there's a lot of, you know, poverty. So we've kind of done it ourselves. We speak to our neighbours about how we can cross-coordinate. But Tranmere's got that quirkiness about it. People do like to help their own. And asking fans to refer other fans is very good. I mean, we've just had 30 requests coming straight today off Tranmere fans who know people who are struggling. And there's no shame. You know, we keep the paperwork to a minimum. Something's delivered to the door, no questions asked, and people feel it helps them. Might help them through to payday, through to the better times. You know,
but then of course the important thing is that when all this is over, clubs and their fans have to remember that there are still people struggling, and it's like we can't just suddenly stop making the effort for people because COVID's over as well. Which again, it's brilliant what football clubs and football fans are doing, but it shouldn't have to be us that are doing it. On a brighter note, Ben, I mean, Kieran's always been a big fan of the way Tranmere is run as a club, and I'll bring Kieran in about this in a moment. But what's your relationship like with the owners at the moment, with the Palioses?
Yeah, I mean, I can't fault them. It sounds very creepy, but they've been a breath of fresh air from day one. And Mark said at the FA, he used to hear about clubs and trusts, fans groups would always lock horns. And one would be at the gates having a protest, the other one would be in the boardroom. And, you know, I think we're very independent, which I think Mark likes. So we can be a critical friend. And he's just brought us on board. And I think it just shows together what you can actually achieve. He let us have some associate director positions. We've had access to the finances. There's never been a time when anything's been hidden. He's a very open fellow, so is Nicola. And, you know, we do work together. Obviously, you look, they're not going to be around forever. We would like to build some fan equity in the club and look down the road to what might happen next. But, yeah, they've been a breath of fresh air.
Kieran, as an outsider, I love that phrase, critical friend. That's a very important one, I think. But remind our listeners, Kieran, some of whom may be new, what it is that you admire so much about the way that Tranmere is run as a club.
Well, from my point of view, I went to interview Mark for my book, and I couldn't believe how open he was, but also his ideas are, you know, everything I heard, I've already got that. That's you're ticking so many boxes. He believes in the fan in the club as being a community hub and using the power of a football club to open those doors within the areas of social deprivation that surround the club that the local authority facilities can't. So if you've got some kids who are on the cusp of being excluded from school, they're potentially getting involved with the wrong sorts and so on. If a social worker goes in or if the school goes in, they're from the establishment.
Yeah.
And you know, immediately the barriers go up. When somebody from Tranmere goes in, and you know, Mark's spoken to me about many of the projects which they run at Tranmere, the first thing is you know, okay, what team do you support? And you know, you're a Blue or a Red or a Tranmere fan, and you've got that first conversation has already taken place, and people warm to you because it's football, and the idea of using the football club as a vehicle to deliver health service, education, exercise, all of these things which we know really drop down in areas of social deprivation where there are genuine problems is a masterstroke, and it should be used all throughout the country. And you know, I'm hoping that if we get this fan-led review of football, that these are the types of things that, regardless of the party in charge, that this will become the norm. And we'll start to use football clubs as, because they are the modern day churches.
Mm. Yeah, Ben, I can only apologise that Kieran began that passion statement with a plug for his book. it's just shameful, Kieran. Thank God both of us don't apply those standards. You clearly have a very good relationship with the club, and as you say, there's a trust representative on the board. But do you have any lingering regrets that the attempted fans takeover back in 2011 didn't quite come off?
No, not really. We learnt a lot from it. I think the owner, Peter Johnson, didn't really believe in it. He took a long time to sell the club. Mark and Nicola do believe in fan equity, and we're talking to him about it. And I think the time comes, sometimes you just got to be patient. We raised a couple hundred thousand from outside the club gates. I think if we were going to do something in future, we'd plan it strategically with Mark and Nicola. And, you know, we'd like to build up a 20-25% equity in the club. Mm. Maybe too soon after Mark and Nicola for the fans perhaps to run the club. But who knows after that? Who knows where football's going to be as well? So it's... Mm. I think sometimes you've just got to bide your time, and it's not about us as individuals. It's about the future 50-100 years of the football club.
And exciting times on the pitch as well. You're fourth in the league. You're in that cup final against Sunderland that you mentioned. Have you got a virtual trip to Wembley planned?
Yeah, we have. We have. And we kind of, you know, between the two clubs at the moment, we've already hit a big target of virtual ticket sales. I mean, obviously, it's no secret that the EFL relegated us, demoted us on points per game last season. I think Mark's been very vocal about that. I suppose how ironic if fans had been able to go to the final, Wembley would have taken their cut, the EFL would have taken their cut. We'd have ended up with some money. But what's materialising now is, Tranmere's community project, Sunderland's Foundation, are going to end up with quite a lot of money from people's generous donations through virtual tickets. Mm. So we're going to bypass all the authorities, get it straight down onto the ground where people in need will benefit from it straight away.
Yeah, I imagine there's probably some EFL officials who are quite glad they don't have to be shaking players' hands in front of 40,000 angry Birkenheaders, which is that's who I feel. It's such a shame that can't be at Wembley. It's heartbreaking. I mean, I've got mates who are Arsenal fans who moan about. Seriously, I was in the Comedy Store dressing room two seasons ago when two comedians, high profile comedian Arsenal fans, moaning about having to go to Wembley for another semi final.
Yeah.
And then fans like you and us and Kieran, who just to not have those one of those rare trips, to not be, it's the journey down as well that you miss the most, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's the excitement to get the train. Yeah.
Oh, all that, just being with your mates and all those memories of the bad times that are put out the window. To end on an even more positive note, Ben, I have to ask, how's the beer business going? I imagine this is not a bad time to be selling beer online, is it?
I mean, we're doing okay online. Obviously, we're waiting to come out of COVID, which looks like it's going to be May time I mean, they're predicting a hospitality boom. I remember last July when people were let out, it was chaos. I don't know what it's going to be like in April and May. chaos. And the optimistic Tranmere fan is, I think, you know, we might have been crowned champions of League Two. We might have won the EFL trophy. We'll have a lot to celebrate right across the board. Could I just mention one more initiative we're doing Wembley weekend? Is,
of course you can, yeah.
Yeah, our local mosque, the World Dean Centre, are kindly providing 250 takeaway meals for people who've been receiving the food parcels. And what they're saying is you'd never treat yourself to a takeaway because you basically got to buy milk and the essentials. And we're going out on the Friday before the Wembley weekend, taking them out to people in the community, building some good community links with kind of the Asian community. And it's just another twist. The club are working with them and kind of break down some barriers and kind of just show that we're all in this together and no one's going to be forgotten.
Well, that's a brilliant note to end this interview on, Ben, because, again, it's a wonderful, touching story, but also it's an investment in the future of Tranmere Football Club because you want people from all parts of the community to come and watch Tranmere. And you've got, understandably, some people from different communities who have no experience of going to football and probably a bit scared of the whole environment. And now you build these bridges and they want to go to football matches. And that's how you can have as many initiatives as you want about getting people from different backgrounds and communities into football. Well, that's how you do it. It's fans doing it that eventually does it. So that's a brilliant positive note to end. And I can't wish you good luck in the final, Ben, in case we've got somebody from Sunderland coming on. And yeah. I wish them good luck. And you realise what a hypocrite I am.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, good luck in the final.
Yeah, and of all the clubs we've got a friendship with, back in 1988, we went to something called the Centenary Final at Wembley. 16 teams were there. And we played Newcastle. And the Sunderland fans were sighted right next to us. And they all jumped in our section. And we've always had a bit of a bond with that football club ever since.
I think there was about eight games going on in the day.
Yeah.
I think I was there. I think Palace were in there.
Yeah.
For I think half an hour. We've got a feeling we were the first team knocked out.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kieran, to end this by talking about our clubs being at Wembley, but it's fine. You'll get there one day. Ben, it's been a pleasure to talk
to you.
Once again, we just want to represent what football fans are doing around the world on this pod. And you're yet another person who's made us proud to be football fans. So good luck in all your endeavors.
Thank you.
If there's anything we can do to publicise anything for you, make sure you let us know. We'll see you again. Take care now, mate.
Great stuff. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers, Ben.
Kieran, again, sometimes people accuse us of being a little bit too soft on people we have on the show, but we're not Panorama. We invite people on so we can celebrate what they're doing for football and the community. And there's no better example than Ben for what clubs are doing. And I was fascinated by what he said about older male fans being too proud to admit they have a problem. So the idea that other fans can secretly refer them, I think, is a very good idea.
Yeah, as you know, Kevin, you know, given my family background, I'm not keen on snitching. But for this particular issue, I'm prepared to make an exception.
Yeah,
if you are aware that somebody is struggling and you reach out, they will thank you. They won't tell you that they're thanking you, but they'll be going, thank Christ for that.
Yeah,
you know,
when
it comes to putting food on the table, and also if we go back to our discussions with Richard Kenyon the previous week, having the ability to pay to heat the food. Yeah, these are terrible stories. But once again, football is coming to the fore. And you know, hats off to Ben and everybody that's performing roles such as his, because you don't do it for the glory, you don't do it for the thanks, you do it because you happen to be really good people.
Yeah, and also good to hear that there seems to be a proper symbiosis between the club owners and the trust as well. It's not just one being allowed to exist by the big club owner. It seems like a proper relationship between, doesn't it? And also, just remind me, I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the interview by asking you while we were talking to Ben, but fan equity, what exactly does that mean in practice?
Well, that means that a fan group will buy a quarter of the club, which means that that fan group will normally have the right to appoint a fan director, which allows them to be involved in decision making. So, you know, where are we going in terms of the ground expansion? How much of the budget is going on players and transfers? You know, are they staying in 5-star hotels when they go away, or can we cut money here, there? And it's just a case of it opens up lines of communication. And it's when there is no communication that conspiracy theories start, you end up with relationships deteriorating. Yeah, we spoke about Ipswich earlier in the podcast, and I think that's a club where you've got an owner who has put in the thick end of £100 million into the club, and everybody hates him, and it's because he doesn't talk to anybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have any questions for our next questions pod on any aspect of football finance, that's Monday for our questions pod. It's questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, as ever, I will hand you over to Birthday Boy plus 3 days to say goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you, folks, for the kind words about the show. If you're enjoying it, make sure you subscribe. If you can give us a review, a nice 5-star review, doesn't matter what you say. You can say you'd rather it was presented by Susie Quattro for All Week Air. It does make a difference in terms of the business side of things, which, you know, Kevin and I, we must confess, we don't really understand, because it involves buttons and internets and things. Other than that, stay safe, look after yourselves, and we speak to you soon.
That's the first time on this pod you've mentioned Susie Quattro, Kieran, but it's the second time today, isn't it?
It is indeed.
What's Susie Quattro in your head all of a sudden? Bye, everybody.
Bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.